welcome to another episode of Pilgrim Devotion. I'm your host, Pastor Michael Howard, the senior pastor of Seaford Baptist Church. This is a podcast for anyone inside or outside of Seaford Baptist Church who's living the pilgrim life, representing the kingdom of God in the kingdom of man. We are back this week with another episode with Shelley Durkee. Shelley, say hello.
Hello, glad to be back.
And last time we got to hear Shelley's story, which I thank you for sharing. I didn't get to say that in the last episode. I said it off air, but seriously, I know that that is not easy to kind of live through that again. I think that I hope that if there are other survivors who just need to hear that somebody else understands. It's like on the healthy anxiety episode I did.
Exactly.
When somebody who has healthy anxiety talks to me and I talk to them, it's like they start talking. And you're like, oh, it's like this language I've been speaking that nobody else knows.
Exactly.
And this person gets the language. Exactly. I hope that other people have that feeling as they hear this. I hope people, even in our own church who listen to it, have a better understanding of what you went through and would give God even more glory for the grace that he showed. And I think that it also does help frame up this conversation.
Sure.
Because people understand that you do have experience in this area. They're going to understand why you're so passionate about it. And I would much rather talk to you about it than me just sit here and try to pontificate on it myself. I think that this is a much better way to go about it. So we're going to shift from Shelley's story into the story of Southern Baptist, which we have to say it's not necessarily a great history.
True.
So in 2019, there was a Houston Chronicle, I think it was like a six-part
series
that came out. So it wasn't just one article that was detailing, cataloging abuse that had taken place in the Southern Baptist Convention. And so you brought up, and we were talking before we started recording, that actually back in, you said it was 2007?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 2007.
There were survivors that went to, survivors, victims, what language should we use?
I think either one. I view them both as interchangeable.
Okay.
So I think you're fine using either one.
So survivors and victims went to the Southern Baptist Convention to say, hey, we have a problem here.
Yes.
How was that received?
Yes. It was received very mixed. Very mixed.
Did they come to the microphone during the convention? Is that how it worked?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
But looking, reading, doing some research, because this wasn't on my radar, right? This wasn't on my radar.
So it was right before your story kind of started to unfold.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like nothing came out of it. And after I didn't start doing like research until my story happened. And I started finding these websites where victims, survivors, they built these websites that like were calling the Southern Baptist Convention to deal with this. And they were listing predators who had been convicted and all of this. And the main thing, Pastor Michael, was, you know, let me back up one step. We have not done a good job of working together as a convention. And I'm not talking about autonomy of the local church or anything like that. I'm talking about when a pastor has been fired, let go from a church, has been historically very easy for that pastor to find another church to serve at.
Right.
Very easy. And so in 2007, the cry was, this has to stop. There has to be something we can do here. There has to, you know, why is there not a list? Why is there not a database so that churches can, you know, churches today, they have background checks and things like that. But that doesn't always get you the story, the full story of what you may need to hear. I also know of some churches who, you know, have covered up why they let a pastor go because
Right.
they just want him to move on, you know?
Yeah.
And just, okay, let's step away from this as much as we can. So that was the cry in 2007.
And so then nobody knows, is this sexual abuse? Is this financial,
right,
you know, skimming money? Is this...
What is it?
Spiritual abuse. There's a lot of reasons a pastor may leave under negative circumstances. Yep. They don't know. Yeah, I mean, even... I think that... Even in just the way members move between churches, Southern Baptist at some point lost track of, it used to be that we cared about the back door, not just the front door.
Right.
So if a member would leave and go to a new church, you would call that pastor, or the pastor would call you.
Yeah, the
transfer a letter.
Yeah.
Cooperation is the key term here, because I think that as we talk about what Southern Baptists have done and should do, church autonomy has been the cry, right?
It's been the battle cry.
You know, hey, we can't transgress church autonomy and be telling churches who they can hire or what they have to say when people leave and all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. We're not saying church autonomy should be transgressed. I'm sitting with someone who's more Baptist than me. You've been a Baptist longer than me. I didn't come to faith until 1999. And I probably didn't realize I wanted to be a Baptist until about 6 years after I came to faith. I just came to faith in a Baptist church. That's all I knew.
Right.
It wasn't until Tom Keehan from Old Powhatan Baptist looked at me and he said, "I'm Baptist by choice. Are you?" And it made me really think as a 20-year-old at the time, am I Baptist by choice? Do I believe the things that Baptists believe? And I started to kind of search it out a little bit. So anyways, Southern Baptist, not just Southern Baptist. No. Baptists all the way back to, I'm talking 1600s and the fine roots of the denomination. We have been a cooperating people.
Yes.
We cooperate together for the most part for the sake of missions and early on for the sake of, there's people who want to beat on us because we don't want to baptize our children, so let's stick together. Even particular Baptists and general Baptists were friendly with one another to an extent, because they associated with one another for the sake of sticking together. So anything we talk about here, I think that you'll hear from us, and I think that what I've heard from others that say we need to do something has not been a, hey, let's trample on church autonomy, but to simply say, we're Baptists, we cooperate together, this is important, let's cooperate together on this. And this group in 2007 was saying, we're not.
Right.
We're not doing a good job.
Right. And I think what bothers me about that is, absolutely, I agree with the autonomy of the local church. I see the goodness in that. My fear is that because we make that the battle cry, it becomes more important than the scripture that tells us, you know, that we have a responsibility to care for our children, that, you know, we have been entrusted with this precious gift of the gospel. We cannot be sharing the gospel while allowing these things to happen.
Sure. And, you know, last year, the star of the show in New Orleans at the convention obviously was, you know, Warren versus Mueller, right? It was women in ministry and women, particularly in pastoral ministry. And the response to Rick Warren, I think if I could sum it up, was autonomy does not mean a lack of accountability.
Right.
The Baptist faith and message means something, right?
Right.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Autonomy does not mean a lack of accountability. Well, then we have to apply that to this issue
Absolutely.
As well. So.
Absolutely.
2007 comes and goes. I mean, I feel like I started to get plugged into what and care about what was going on in Baptist life. Really, when I came back to Virginia, join up with this church.
Sure.
I, from the start, wanted to be an SBCV guy, Southern Baptist Conservatives of Virginia. I wanted to be involved in the state convention. I wanted to keep our, I was the youth pastor here at the time. I wanted to keep the youth group connected to them by going to their events.
Right.
And I also have been raised up by my friend Brad Russell, who is, now Brad is all about some church autonomy, but Brad is also, he is Mr. SBCV in a lot of ways. I mean, Brad really loves to see local churches coming together to do meaningful work. So I came from Brad's school, so I'm thinking I want to be SBCV guy. So I think that's when I started to get kind of plugged into Baptist life, Baptist thought a little bit more. What's going on out there? What's being said on the Twitter machine? All those sorts of things. I didn't hear much about sexual abuse reform, any of that stuff. It wasn't really until the Houston Chronicle article that I feel like a spotlight started to get shown on it. Now, our church, because of your story and everything that happened here, our church had more of an awareness, I think.
Yes,
there were things our church used to not do.
Right.
That we started to do.
Exactly.
New policies, new procedures being put in check. I mean, even down to, I remember when I moved into the senior pastor office, when I became the senior pastor, there was no windows to the office. I was like, you got to cut me a window in this door. I want a window in the wall. The student ministry room, you know, we cut big windows in the doors. Like, even down to those sorts of things, we wanted to just have as much accountability, transparency, those sort of things as we could. But I didn't hear a ton about it just in SBC life at large.
Right.
I mean, there's Calvinism and Arminianism fights. And there's fights about, can you speak in tongues on the mission field? And all those sorts of things. Like, I remember those conversations, but not this.
Right.
So it's after the Houston Chronicle article.
It was a bomb.
It was a bomb.
There's no other word for it but a bomb. And I don't know if you remember at the time, the Catholic Church, was very embroiled in this. It was coming out public just how deep of a problem they had with sexual abuse. On social media, started seeing the hashtag MeToo.
Right.
All of these things were kind of ramping up. And I think, I don't know if this is true, but I think to a degree, Southern Baptist in general, maybe sigh of relief, pointed their finger at the Catholics and said, at least we don't have that problem.
Well, sure. And there's a lot of things that you can point at as a Protestant and be like, well, that's what you get when you don't let the priests marry and those sorts of things. And yet there were people in our convention who knew we had a problem.
Absolutely.
And knew that there were people high up in the convention because as much as we talk about autonomy, let's not act like there's not a hierarchy you can climb.
Exactly.
And that there were people who were being protected.
Yep.
And that has come out in the last few years.
That has come out.
So when it comes to, 2019 happens, and maybe it's COVID that slowed down our response a little bit, but I don't really remember a clear response until 2021. I remember being at the convention in Nashville in 2021, and it was going to be really, the convention was going to be about two things, CRT and sexual abuse. CRT ended up being a kind of a nothing. There wasn't there wasn't much that really happened there. Rolled back a little bit what had taken place at the convention a couple of years before. But sexual abuse, I remember the messenger saying, so let me just stop and say, Southern Baptist Convention technically is not a denomination. It is exactly what it says. It is a convention of churches. And the reason that's important is because if someone in Nashville says, all the churches have to stop watching Disney movies, we actually don't have to stop watching Disney movies. We could stand up in front of our church and say, you should stop watching Disney movies, or we might go, yeah, we're not going to mess with that. We don't care. So there's your church autonomy. Resolutions get passed when the convention comes together. Those resolutions are not binding. And yet sometimes at the convention, the messengers who come and represent the local churches, the messengers will say, we need to take action on something.
Right.
The messengers elect an SBC president. Right now, his name is Bart Barber. Typically, they serve 2 1-year terms.
Right.
And there are other officers elected. There are trustees that oversee the different SBC entities. Like, you have the Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission. You have the International Mission Board. You have Lifeway.
The seminaries.
The seminaries. And you have committees.
Yep.
And the messengers, there's too many of us to meet. It's not like our church. We have a business meeting, a members meeting, we call it. You got to have 50 people there to have a quorum. Like, to get Southern Baptists together is quite a thing.
It is.
So, there's a lot of us.
It is.
So we only meet one time a year for just a few days.
Yeah.
That's why I always say, like, if you really want to come and do business there, you better have your ducks in a row, because you get a very little amount of time with that microphone.
Oh, yes.
So your resolution better be watertight.
Yep.
Whatever it is you want to see happen better be really good, because if it gets picked apart in a second.
Yep. And you'd better skip lunch.
That's
so that
right.
You can be at that microphone.
Yeah, that's right. There's just no time. So typically something gets brought up one year isn't really dealt with till the next year.
Right.
But in between conventions, the day-to-day functioning of the Southern Baptist Convention is it's carried along by what is called the Executive Committee,
right,
which is a board of 86 Executive Committee trustees. They are really carrying out the will of the messengers throughout the year.
Right.
So in 2021, we get together, we say, we need to do something. Now, help me here. Do you remember, was the task force created in 2021?
I do believe it was.
And so...
Or no, I think maybe it was created in 2022.
That might make sense. So basically in 2021, we're like, we need to do something. And then the executive board needs to take action.
Right.
After that, say, here's what we're going
to
do.
And they go, they take it back to, right, their board, have the discussions, and okay.
Right.
So, like you said, it takes about a year.
It does.
To get anything.
Changes granular in the SBC.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Unless you're changing the Baptist faith and message, which apparently
enough.
We can just do that on the floor.
Any day.
That's what we did last year. It was kind of scary how easy it was to change that.
Yeah,
and I think
that was a little terrifying.
Yeah, I think that I heard Al Mohler recently do an interview with the Kenwood Institute, and he was like, that shouldn't be that easy.
Right.
We need to fix that. So,
yeah.
So what happens then? So a task force is created, and their job essentially is to carry out reform?
Yeah. How are we going to? We've got a problem. We've got this bomb that has gone off, and now we are very much in the public eye. I don't know if you recall, but, you know, this, it started to hit the news.
Yep.
And I remember that these group, there was a small group of survivors who had been vocal all this time. And now there's kind of some relief from them, right? We're getting some movement here. And, but like you said, it's a big machine.
Yep.
And I don't mean that in a negative term, but it's slow. Change is slow. Response is slow. And, you know, there are people, rightfully so, who want to protect the convention. Not always for the right reasons, though. And we've seen that in multiple ways.
We have.
And so... You know, it's one thing to guard the convention or guard the denomination, however you want to say it, for the purposes of glorifying God, right? There are essentials that we agree on. There are things that we do and don't do, and we're going to guard that. When we are guarding the denomination or the convention because we want to protect the image, then I feel like we have stepped away from any semblance of glorifying God.
Sure. It's like if we take a stand on transgenderism and the New York Times calls us bigots.
Right.
For that. We're like, okay.
So be
it. I mean, right.
So be it.
This is just part of representing Christ faithfully in the world as a convention. If we take a stand... if we don't take a stand on sexual abuse in the name of protecting Johnny Hunt, then because he's the face of this,
right?
We have gone past trying to be faithful at that point, and I think that we're actually venturing into the areas of falsehood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so the It's dangerous. The task force is asked to investigate five different areas, basically. Mm-hmm. Allegations of abuse by staff and members. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned Johnny Hunt. So a report, they basically put out a report that lists out what they found. And in that report, they found that that Johnny Hunt had done some stuff. I'm not going to get into all the details just for the sake of time, but you can find it online. Mm-hmm. Johnny Hunt had done some things that particularly as a pastor who has a wife, mm-hmm. disgusted me.
Yep.
And it was covered up.
Yep.
Southern Baptists know about it. He's still going around speaking at events, absolutely. Getting multiple checks from Southern Baptist mm-hmm. entities.
Absolutely.
There was mishandling of abuse allegations and mistreatment of victims. They were asked to look into those things. There was a pattern of intimidation of mm-hmm. victims and advocates that they were asked to look into. You know, there's situations where you have former SBC presidents saying, coming out and admitting, yeah, at my church I suppressed right. the reporting of sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. There was situations where accused abusers were, you know, dismissed quietly. Mm-hmm. Police are never told, even though clear crimes have been
right.
committed. You talked about, you know, the former pastor here that was, you know, here when you were here, coming back to the church, trying to get ducks in a row, mm-hmm. trying to cooperate with the police. Like, those things aren't, it's not assumed those things happen.
No, it is not.
And what we found is that they weren't necessarily happening. Resistance to reform initiatives, mm-hmm. where you had, you know, again, church autonomy. Well, these accusations are just the devil trying to get to us, right. so we're just going to brush it off and resist
it.
So
many times.
Mm-hmm. So these are the sort of things the task force is asked to look into. Mm-hmm. What do we have? What do we have out of all this? What is it has the investigation, sure. the reporting, what has it gotten us so far? We have a website?
We do have a website. There is a couple of websites, and in fact, I think I've pulled together some. Those are included in the resources that I think you're going
to
share.
Yes, I will. I will share. I'm going to try to. If you want the resources, email us at mhoward@seatfordbaptist.com. I will send those to you.
Yeah.
I'm going to see. I don't know if I can put that many links in the show notes,
sure.
but I'm going to see if I can like attach a PDF or something. I don't know. I'm going to try. I will try. But if nothing else, if you're listening to this and you want these resources, please email me.
Yeah, absolutely. But what we have is we have some good things out there. I don't want to say it's all negative, because it's not. The response has not been all negative. Just the fact that there's awareness now, just the fact that some of these, and I'm going to use the term, good old boy network.
Sure.
And what I mean by that is that protection, that covering up, that hush-hush, you know, we know this is happening, but that person's got power. And I'll come back to the power thing in a moment. Some of that has been dismantled. Praise God, because it needed to be in so many ways. So that is goodness. Awareness just in churches. Like you said, the changes that took place here at Seaford Baptist Church. New policies, new procedures. So that, I've seen that happen in multiple churches across the United States, because it's that, oh, wait a second. If it could happen at Woodstock, you know,
right.
why couldn't it happen here?
Yeah.
You know, and so good, positive things. There are good resources that the convention has put out. There are fantastic resources that the ERLC
yeah.
has put out. So there are good. It's the awareness. It's that we're having conversations. It's that you and I are sitting here in this room right now having an open conversation. What we don't have, and I'm afraid that the window is closing quickly, What we don't have is, regardless of autonomy of the local church, there is that hierarchy. And what we don't have is that response of the one thing that they could do and need to do and have the information for doing is to create a database.
Right.
And this database should contain every Southern Baptist, past Southern Baptist pastor, staff member, Sunday school volunteer, I don't care what role they had. If they were in a leadership role, their name should be in a database so that a church can do the research.
Right. If I have no intention of leaving here anytime soon. I hope that I don't get kicked out or anything.
Doubt that will happen.
But if let's say I was leaving this church, I'm applying at, you know, First Baptist Johnsonville,
mm-hmm.
and FBC Johnsonville, it's not a real church. I'm sure there probably is one
somewhere.
But FBC Johnsonville should be able to just look my name up.
Absolutely.
And say, oh, there's nothing negative attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we don't have that. I think the biggest reason we don't have it is because of, and you heard this a little bit on the floor in New Orleans, a disagreement over, I don't think there's much disagreement over a situation like your ex-husband.
Right.
If someone's been convicted of a crime.
Serving jail time.
They're like, all right, let's load them up on there.
Yep.
It's the reported sexual abuse without criminal charge.
Right.
Accusations. Mm-hmm. People are like, well, when do we put them on there? How far does it go? Mm-hmm. That's where there's been disagreement, and that's been a holdup. My thing is, I'm like, well, can we just start with
right
the criminal charges?
Right.
And go from there? Let's do something. I agree with you about a closing window. Mm-hmm. Sexual abuse is not the number one thing SBC is caring about coming into Indianapolis this year.
It's the law amendment.
It's the law amendment. Yeah. It is mm-hmm. the latch on the door that essentially, I believe it goes into the Constitution, and it will... It was put out there last year. It has to wait a year, and then, like you said, you got to go that whole year. And that will basically put into the Constitution that a pastor, elder, is a man,
mm-hmm.
a qualified called man, not just right. any man, but a qualified and called man. That's the by far the star of the show. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's like pack the vote movements on Twitter or X or whatever.
It's almost like the conservative resurgence back in the 80s, you know. I fully expect to see buses roll up, and, you know, I think it's going to be that.
It's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And do you have others that are not for it, who aren't necessarily egalitarians,
right.
but they have their reasons for not being for it? I don't want to make this podcast about that. I probably will talk about that as we get closer to Indianapolis. But bottom line is that you could see sexual abuse being pushed to the periphery this year. Oh,
absolutely.
And we just kind of have maybe a little squabble here and there mm-hmm. about what should go in the database or not, and then it gets pushed it off another year. Mm-hmm. And like you say, the window of care, the window of focus, the window of recency to the Houston Chronicle article is closing on us.
It is.
And we don't want to let 2007 happen again,
mm-mm.
where this goes by, and we don't take real action. And so...
Well, and here's the thing about the database. I've had some conversations with Robert Downen, who was the author of the Houston Chronicle articles. We've had some back and forth here and there. I really appreciate the work he did. Greatly appreciate the work he did. But the Houston Chronicle, when they started investigating this, they created a database.
Mm-hmm.
And they took, because it started coming back up in 2018, and that's when they started, wait, what's going on here? And so they took the 10 years, anyway, they took a span of 20 years and created a database. It's just those convicted And at that point, they're not keeping it up or anything like that. But at that point, they had 263 names in there.
Right.
That's a starting point. That is
that somebody, to your point. They didn't even, it's not even Southern Baptists who did that, right? To provide a starting point. So I just don't understand why we can cooperate together to create, to do mission work. We can cooperate together to kick egalitarians out of the convention.
Sure, yep.
Why can't we cooperate together using technology to do this? And by the way, last year we also ousted a church who was hiring someone who was accused of sexual abuse, and it seemed like it was not just an accusation, but there was some proof on the table.
Right.
And this church was going to go ahead and hire him anyways.
Yeah.
And the convention said, "You're out."
Yeah.
They were ousted along with Saddleback, and I can't remember the name of the church in Louisville.
And that was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. But if we're going to, I just don't really understand why, if we're going to do that, why we would not have the database. So I personally am for the database. Let's start with the minimum and we can go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Start somewhere and we go from there.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think there are some people who would have no problem creating databases of egalitarian churches.
I'm sure, too.
Who have women as pastors that need to be out of the convention.
Right.
And not have a seat at the table at the, you know, when we gather as a convention. So, in fact, we know that those lists have been created.
Yes.
In fact, my first youth pastor, he's an egalitarian brother. His wife is an egalitarian. They serve, I don't think they serve at the same church anymore, because I think she's on staff as a pastor at a church and he's on staff at a pastor at another church. But there was a list put out, and there was my old youth pastor's wife. There was her face on the list.
Yep.
So anyways, I think that we sometimes talk out of both sides of our mouths about this church autonomy issue.
We do. I don't think there's anything we can do about that, human nature, what have you. But, like I said, I think that window is closing fast. And so, you know, I've kept up with it, obviously, because of how close I am, because of how it's impacted my life. And not just my life as a mom of a victim, or my life as an ex-wife of a pastor who is serving a jail sentence right now, but also as a church sexual abuse survivor myself. And this is not the time for that story, but this is huge. And so I've kept up with it, and I've been very focused, like, okay, you know, the convention's going to make the right move here. You know, they're going to establish a database. What else can they do? I have reviewed all the material that's been put out, the good and the not so good. And quite honestly, Pastor Michael, about 3 months ago, I started to come to the conclusion, and I feel like it's the right one. I feel like, you know, I've prayed about this a lot. I've talked to God a lot about this. But I feel like, I really think that now is the time maybe that we need to shift our focus back to the churches. I still think the convention should do a database, but all of that fighting, that arguing, has overshadowed the very good work that was being done in those early days. Here are resources.
Yeah.
Here is training. Here, if you find you as a church, your church in the middle of this nightmare, here's who you can talk to. Here's who you can get help with. And, you know, see for Baptists, I can't sing their praises enough, of course, all through God's leading, but they immediately reached, they knew, we don't know how to handle this. This is not anything we've ever dealt with. They reached out to people who did, had them come in, talk to the staff, help them put together a plan. That's the kind of information we need to get out. And quite honestly, I will say that is the kind of information we need to get out to our smaller churches.
Yes.
I think the bigger churches maybe have a little bit more resource, maybe have people in the congregations who can help, you know, guide counselors and, you know, maybe even law enforcement.
Yeah, right. More they happen resources. To have those diversity of members, yes, just in occupation where you're going to have some people who are a little exactly. more expert.
But what worries me are those small churches, the small churches that I grew up in, the small churches that are just kind of struggling to survive and may not have the policies and procedures, maybe even run by one family, you right. know? It's those churches that I fear, if we don't push hard to equip all of our churches in the convention, quit fighting about this and train them and give them the resources they need, whether they have 2 members or 10,000 members, it's those small churches that predators can go to and hop from church to church,
yeah,
doing their damage, leaving destroyed lives in the wake.
I agree, and I think that there's also, it almost sounds like we're talking about like government here, but I think the state conventions, mm-hmm. they're the ones, you know, like honestly here, I don't move that much when Nashville says something. Right. I move more when Colonial Heights says something.
Absolutely.
When something comes from SBCB, because I know them.
Right.
Like, I go to the convention, I don't know Bart Barber.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, forget his first name, Leatherwood from the ERLC. Yes, yep. I don't know him.
Brent, yeah.
But, yeah, I know Brian Autry.
Right.
Our I think his title is executive director. Mm-hmm. I know Jeff Mingy, our church mobilization strategist, which is like the old director of missions position.
Right.
I know these men. So when they have something to say, I want to listen. And I think that it is, I think the state conventions need to take it upon themselves to provide that training for local churches.
Absolutely.
Because that's when, you know, a lot of these churches you're talking about, they can't even afford to go to Indianapolis. Nope. Their pastor can't, you know, to send their pastor to the SBC. Right. They can't even afford it. They just maybe keep up with what's going on through the internet or through the news stories, or maybe they just say, I don't really care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but
because I'm preaching on Sunday and I'm cleaning the toilets on Monday.
Exactly. But they tend to come to, we call it homecoming, or to, mm-hmm. you know, their state convention each year.
Yeah.
And go to workshops and things like that. And then they have their director of missions or their church mobilization strategist mm-hmm. providing training locally. I think that's really where a difference can be made. And that's where I just don't want to see us lose sight of this.
Right.
And that is where I do, though, think it is on the national convention, for lack of a better term, Southern Baptist Convention at large, mm-hmm. to say to Brian Autry, to say to whoever leads North Carolina Baptist right. or Kentucky Baptist, hey, you need to be mobilizing your churches, strengthening your churches and training your churches in the area of sexual abuse reform
yeah.
and make sure that your people are safe.
Yep. And if you don't know how to do that, we will help you. You know, the convention yes. can help the states know how to do that.
Database resources.
Only place. Yep.
And then we could also just say, we need to wrap up. We don't have time to get into this, but also don't do boneheaded things publicly that look like you're still trying to cover things up.
Exactly.
You know, I know we had the amicus brief and that yeah. whole thing that happened last fall, which again, people can look these things up.
Sure.
But don't do things that reek of the old days, the good old boy network.
Right.
Let's be transparent and let's try to be careful not to, you know, I know that the word trigger has a lot of baggage these days, but seriously, like someone like you sees that stuff and you're like, oh my gosh, is this where we're at? Are we still here?
You're right.
So let's think through, you know, state convention level, national level.
Yep.
Let's think through the moves that we're making and what it says about us.
You're right.
And how they'll be perceived. So.
And along those same lines, you know, I think it's very easy to be caught up in the politics of it.
Yes.
And I, if the one message I want to get across here is to remember your audience, to remember two things. Number one, we're talking about sin. Sin that should grieve us to the very core of our being. Sin that should shred us and wreck us. And actually, I'm going to say three things. Then we also need to remember, you're talking about people's lives that are being shattered by this sin. And not just, well, everyone around that, everyone involved in whatever has taken place. These are real people. To this day, this happened 14 years ago. My husband's finishing up a 14-year service sentence this year. And to this day, I still have women who reach out to me from all over the world, even our missionaries, and find me through my website and say, I don't know what to do. Right. I don't know where to go. I don't know how to help my child. I don't know how to put my life together. I don't know how this happened to me. I'm a victim. I don't know who to tell. So you're talking real people, just as real as you and I are sitting in this room.
That's right.
And it's very easy to forget that.
Yeah, just let them be numbers on a sheet.
Yep.
Faceless people.
Yep, absolutely. And then the fourth thing is, we do not talk enough about God in this. And I'm not talking about, you know me, I am not a hyper spiritual, you know, everything, like I said in the last episode, you know, there's a sign from God and everything's a sign from God. And that's not me. I'm not a super hyper spiritual talker or anything
sure,
like that.
Sure, right.
But we do not discuss God as much as we need to where this area is concerned. We do not discuss enough how it grieves him. We do not discuss enough how sexual abuse impacts somebody's faith. And is there a God? You know, is God real? Does he see me? Does he know me? How did he let these things happen? We also don't talk about a God enough in this situation who is sovereign and who is kind and full of grace and is truly the only one that can bring comfort and healing to these situations. And so I think that would be the things I would leave this conversation with.
That's good. That's very good. Thank you so much for this.
Absolutely.
This has been a blessing. Hearing your story, getting to talk this out. I hope people listening to this don't leave going, well, my gosh, the Southern Baptist Convention is evil.
Right. Please don't do that.
Shelley and I are both reformers at heart.
Yeah.
We talk about these things because we actually love the convention.
Absolutely.
And we want to see it be reformed. We want to see it grow and grow numerically, mm-hmm. but also grow to be more healthy. Mm-hmm. And to see the churches in it be healthy. And it's the same reason I care about the Rick Warren issue last year is the reason I care about this. It's because I want to see healthy local Southern Baptist churches that are reaching more people in their context and, you know, soul by soul, adding to the kingdom and bringing us closer to the day when Jesus returns.
Absolutely.
So, and we care about the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we... Sexual abuse reflects poorly on his name, and like you said, that grieves him. So,
yeah, thank you for having me. I would say, you know, if you want to share my website too,
what is your website?
Out there, it is shelleyjerky.com, and you can add that maybe to the show notes. And I do want to say, you know, if there's anybody out there, my other fear in this, and I'll end with this, is because there is so much loudness fighting or, you know, about this subject. My fear is that there are people who are suffering in silence. They're watching us go at each other about this, and yet there are people that are really hurting and need somebody who will hear them. You can reach out to me at my website. I can put you in contact with people who can help.
Wonderful. Absolutely. So Shelley Durkee Durkee.com. Mm-hmm. Durkee is spelled with two E's at the it end, is. Not mm-hmm. like turkey.
Not like turkey.
Yes. Mm-hmm. D-U-R-K-E-E. Mm-hmm. So ShellyDurkee.com. And Shelly does not have two E's in it.
Right.
So S-H-E-L-L-Y. So here's what I think I'm going to do. Can we put the website, your website, in the show notes? And could you put that, the resource list, on your website?
I can do that.
And that way people just click on the link to Shelly's website and you'll be able to see all the resources that she has there, as well as all the writing she's done. Not just on this. You have great writing about other things. One of my favorite things you ever wrote was about Christmas Eve. I think about it every Christmas Eve, the day of anticipation.
Thank you.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We'll ask the questions we ask at the end of every episode. How is your soul? How is God's grace at work in your life? And how would you like to see His grace at work in your life? You think through these questions. You want to talk to a pastor, you can reach out to us at connect@seafordbaptist.com. We will get back in touch with you. Until next time, keep living the pilgrim life.